I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This is On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at what is happening in Western New York with news, features, and special guests. Now here's your host, Penny Wolfgang.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to On Target. I'm your host, Penny Wolfgang, and it's my pleasure to be with you every week, and we try to talk about subjects that we think are interesting and important and educational for all of us who live here in the Western New York community. The current momentum happening in and around downtown Buffalo did not happen by accident. If something were to stop this energy, excitement, and progress, that would not be an accident either. So I am quoting a friend of mine and a friend of yours and somebody who is one of the most, I think, influential and important people here in Western New York and somebody who is so recognized because of all the work that she's done for Buffalo and for the Western New York area in the last few years. And she is in the studio with me, so even though I am quoting her, she is now going to quote herself. Does that make sense? She's actually here in person. So we're talking about Dottie Gallagher, and Dottie is the president and CEO of the Buffalo-Niagara Partnership. And recently, there was a story in the media quoting, written by Dottie Gallagher, and talking about this renaissance in Buffalo downtown development particularly. The headline actually said, Buffalo's renaissance needs support to continue. And then, of course, goes on to talk about what's been happening downtown and in all of Western New York in the last couple of years. I thought this would be really interesting. I'll see if I could get the author of this article here in person. And here she is. Thank you so much for coming again to On Target. Because I know we've been together on Target in the past years. But I like our listeners to keep up and to know what's current and what's happening. And probably we should start with some statistics about the renaissance that we're talking about, the economic renaissance.
When I wrote that story, it was really about what's happened in downtown Buffalo. And I think downtown is, for me, the heart of the region. You know, as downtown Buffalo and really downtown Niagara Falls go, that's how the region will go. And I think Buffalo is in much better shape than it was probably the last time I was here. We did a study, which is precipitated that article that I wrote. We did a study that showed really, where are we in terms of downtown Buffalo and where are we going? Because developers have been building a lot of rental units and, you know, there was a question among some of our members saying, is there more there and how do we keep downtown moving forward? But, you know, I got to like roll this back to 6 or 7 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, the mayor was really looking, staring at the face of the HSBC Tower being empty and very high commercial vacancy rates in downtown Buffalo and a lot of empty and blighted buildings and saying, what are we going to do? And the partnership, this predates me, but the partnership in the city really put together a strategy called the Buffalo Building Reuse Project, which basically said, there are so few people living downtown in Buffalo relative to other cities. Even fewer of them were living in there were fewer people at that time living in downtown Buffalo than were living in downtown Syracuse, which is a much smaller city than we are. So the strategy was really about how do you take these empty buildings and make them into viable apartments? And anybody who's been downtown can see that strategy has been successful. And we've, over the past, really since 2007, we've increased the population of downtown Buffalo by about 10%, which is super exciting. And the question then becomes, well, where do we go from here? And that's really what I wrote that story about. I will say one of the misnomers around downtown housing has been that it's really for just rich people and it's high-end rentals. And our study looked at that. And surprisingly, Penny, the fastest growing segment of people living in downtown Buffalo are middle-class residents making between $50,000 and $75,000, which most people wouldn't say was true. And if you look at the number of people in downtown Buffalo who are earning under $25,000 a year, that population is remained relatively stable. So this notion that we have all this gentrification and it's only rich white people living in downtown is really nonsense. And in fact, we've seen significant increases in population in every racial composition as well. So we've created a really good, diverse neighborhood in downtown Buffalo that is not quite where we want it to be, but is definitely better than where it was.
But the point is that before all of this started, it was desolate.
Desolate.
I mean, when I think back, like you said, the last time you were on Target probably with us, and then what we're talking about, there were none of these waterfront homes. There were none of these condos. There were none of these, what am I thinking of, flats or when they're
right.
taking over that's rental units and making lofts. That's what I'm trying to think
exactly,
of.
Exactly.
And it's just like an entirely different community.
Totally. And I think it would not have happened without sort of a collection of incentives because it's really expensive to renovate an old building. It's much cheaper to build something new. And of course, our architecture is part of our heritage. And thankfully, we didn't knock those buildings down. We actually rebuilt them. And I think have added a lot to the fabric of downtown Buffalo. So not only do we have people living there, but now you don't have to walk by this empty, blighted building, which of course was very destabilizing. And if you go back to those days when things were so desolate, really the only people that were living in downtown Buffalo, other than on the waterfront where we've had, you know, a neighborhood for some time, were really people in public housing. And what happens when you have a concentration of lower incomes like that, you don't have amenities that help the neighborhood. You don't have, you know, we still don't have a grocery store, but grocery stores and other sort of valuable amenities. So the goal, of course, is to create a really diverse neighborhood that has that benefits everybody. That's really where the mayor wants to be and certainly where we want to be.
And we're definitely on the way. In case you just tuned in, I want to tell you again that we are talking to Dottie Gallagher, and Dottie is the president and CEO of the Buffalo Niagara Partnership, which is supposed to be responsible, which is taking the credit and the blame, right? The credit and the blame, but definitely the credit for a lot of the renaissance that's happening. And I just realized when you said something about Niagara Falls, that Niagara is part of your don't they have a separate partnership kind of group?
They have a chamber up there, like there are chambers all over the region, but we are really the regional chamber of commerce, and so we look at really Erie and Niagara County as our footprint, and we have members in both places. Absolutely,
We're not going to be depressed by talking about Niagara County, are we, compared to what we've done in Buffalo?
Well, I do think, you know, to be frank, I do think that Buffalo's downtown is in far better shape than Niagara Falls. But I have to say, I don't know if you've been to the state park at all recently. I was there twice this summer. And the investments that the state has made into the Niagara Falls State Park are just transformative. I mean, it has never looked so good. And I think there's a real effort to try to revitalize and develop that area. There's some new hotels up there. I mean, nowhere near where Buffalo is in terms of development, and the poverty in Niagara Falls is speaks for itself, unfortunately. But so there's a long way to go.
Now let's talk a little bit about what people euphemistically call the Buffalo Billion. I don't know if people even know what it means, really, but it seems like a term that is thrown around time and time again, only positively and negatively.
Yeah, so, you know, some years ago, the governor came to all of the state and created these regional councils and asked every region to come up with its own plan. And Buffalo had the fortunate benefit of having the UB Research Institute, UBRI, help the community actually formulate the plan. And we, at the time, had many plans that had been developed and sat on a shelf for lack of funding, you know, waterfront plans and so on. And so to UBRI's credit, they were able to assimilate all of this, get a lot of community input, and really develop, for the first time, a comprehensive economic development plan for the region that not just identified buildings and things that we wanted to be fixed, but looked at target industries and where we should be investing in our economy. And the governor, wisely saw the momentum that we sort of was developing here in Buffalo, and sort of coined the phrase Buffalo Billion, and agreed that if we could get private sector money to help, that the state would invest a goodly sum of money here, $1 billion. And I think You know, I've joked, I wish our name was Truffalo because maybe we would have gotten $1 trillion. But but I think it was, for him, a demonstration project. And you can argue, and people do, about the efficacy of some of those investments and whether or not, you know, they were well done. But there is no question in my mind, and certainly all the economic data supports it, that the governor's attention, the consolidation of that plan and that seed funding did prime the pump for Buffalo's renaissance as it is right now. So I do think we owe the governor a debt of gratitude.
And where does it stand? I mean, have we plans for future use, or have we used it all? Or
I think the state money is, you know, that was committed to. I don't really know exactly where the tally is, but I think it's, you know, I think it's substantially spent. But there are still state investments being made here and elsewhere. But if you look at what's happened since that time, and it's not all due to the governor. I mean, if you look at, you know, if you look at M&T Bank, for example, you know, 25% of all the private sector jobs that have been created here in the past 10 years or so have been through M&T, the expansion of their business. If you look at the investments that Pegulas have made in downtown Buffalo, you know, and so on, you know, we have had significant leadership in the private sector that has helped this along. But if you look at where we are as a community, some startling changes really are around our demographics. So, for example, we have more young people living here. Since 2011, we have our population of people between the ages of 20 to 34 is 6.8% higher than, you know, than where we were, and about 1% higher than the national average. So, and Penny, you know this, you and I have been on the planet and around for a long time. You know, we watched for decades young people leaving our region, and during the recession, they didn't leave, and luckily, opportunity was here that many of them have stayed. So the question in my mind about our future really is, how can we keep them here, and can we make sure that we're making investments like in lofts in downtown, which is where young people want to live, to keep young people here as the older generation gets to retirement age. So something like 20% of working age adults will retire in the next 5 to 10 years in this region. So that's a big challenge that we have. So I think that we have that going for us. There's been $56 billion in private sector fueled development within the 8-county Western New York region in the past 5 years. I mean, those are numbers we just have not seen. So it's a great time to be here. And I would say, you know, back in the day, people thought things were worse than they really are. And I think now people think things are better than they really are. I mean, I think we still have a long way to go, which again was part of the point of that story, which is to say, we haven't gotten so big for our britches that the market can take care of itself. We are still net losing population, about 4,000 people a year. Our construction costs are higher than the national average. Our rents are lower than the national average. So development projects here are costly. And we just have to sort of keep it together and move forward and not sort of believe our own press releases about where we're going, but do everything we can to keep the momentum moving.
Now, some of these issues, construction costs being higher, for example, you just mentioned, and some of the others, are really statewide issues. I was going to ask you the question, are they really statewide issues as opposed to something like we in the county can control?
Well, I think, yes, I think scaffold law here adds about 20% of cost to every project,
maybe
both public and private.
Maybe people don't know what that means.
So what that means is that if you do a project, any sort of development project here, you're required to buy a form of insurance that protects, because the person who's building whatever they're building has absolute liability for anything that happens, which means, let's say, someone is grossly negligent on a job site. It doesn't matter if that person is grossly negligent. The person who's building that project is responsible. So that you have to buy this level of insurance in order to protect against that. It's a state requirement. We're the only state in the nation that has that left. If you look here, for example, in any public project, you have to pay what they call prevailing wages, which sounds good. It adds about 20% 10% to the cost of every project. And for example, one of the things that's under threat right now out of Albany is to make any project that gets any form of public funding to subject to prevailing wage. And what people don't understand, that's not just about the wages that get paid to the person who's earning it and how prevailing wage is defined, but is also added onto that things like, the trouble from the pension problems of the 80s and all of that are added to that cost. And that's why it's just, it just makes New York very uncompetitive. So you're right. I think we're trying to keep this renaissance moving in an environment where we have one of the highest regulated and overtaxed states. The Tax Foundation just last week ranked us 48th out of 50, or the third most business unfriendly state in the union. And we moved up a notch. Thank you, New Jersey. but environment, we have to be mindful of that. So for example, right now, there's stories in the paper about the old Donovan building, and they got a 485 city tax credit to put that Marriott in there. And people are complaining about it, saying, well, that's not a good use of taxpayer money, et cetera. But what people don't understand who are saying that is that the Donovan building has never been on the tax rolls. And now that we have a really viable business there, it contributes over $225,000 a year in taxes. So we can't have these myopic arguments. We have to just understand where we are. And if we're making very wise public investments in terms of incentives that actually stabilize a neighborhood or create a business that generates traffic and other business, then it's a good investment of our dollars.
They always talk about the fact that New York is the highest taxes, the taxes for gas, taxes for the ones you were just talking, the taxes you were just referring to, incentives. And then what can we do about it? Because it affects, it's the same with the welfare, welfare public assistance.
The entitlements.
So I don't know, what does the chamber, or they're not called the chamber now, but I got it, the partnership.
Yeah.
Do you try to explain this or influence the legislators in Albany to understand how this is hurting business, for example?
Well, we do have a very big part of what we do is advocacy work on behalf of the community and the region. And I will say this, one of the challenges that we have in this regard is we live in a state that has two different economies. What New York City can afford, we can't afford here. And a lot of the power and the decision-making happens downstate. And so we find ourselves in a constant battle saying, I can't say it better than Alec Baldwin. He was talking about his mom loving Wegmans and she loved the $6 meals. And he said, you can't even get a cup of coffee in New York for $6. But that's true. That's true. But I think that illustrates the challenge because people in their ivory tower in Albany not really understanding what happens down the thruway in cities like Buffalo, Rochester, and Syracuse, but also, the agricultural communities that we have that have different needs from an infrastructure point of view. So it's a constant battle and one that is incredibly challenging.
And I wanted to tell everyone, in case they just tuned in again, we are talking to Dottie Gallagher, who's the president and CEO of the Buffalo Niagara Partnership, about Buffalo and Western New York and the challenges and the economic issues and the renaissance that we're going through and plans for the future. When we talk about that, every year you give a sort of a report,
yes,
right? And in that report, you mention what you think are the issues that we, as a Western New York area, should be concerned with. Have we talked about all of them?
Well, I would say there's two, very big looming challenges, one of which the partnership is spending a great deal of time and resource working on, and that we touched on a little bit, which is the future of workforce. We have to sort of grow our own here. We have to make sure that we have the workers for tomorrow, because if we don't have the workforce that we need, those jobs will leave the region, and ultimately there'll be fewer of us to support the region. So workforce development and getting those pipelines sort of straightened out is something that we're really working on. And that really starts with everything from public education to really looking at our issue of poverty in our community. And for example, we have a slightly few percentage less participation of labor workforce participation, which means fewer working age people who can work do work here. And I'm not exactly sure why, but I can't help but think it has to do with generational poverty and the issues of race. And I think as a community, we've got to deal with equity issues and racial equity overall, because in order to really grow, we need diversity in our economy, in our region, and we have a lot of work to do in that regard. You know, we have a very challenged public school system in the city of Buffalo and in Niagara Falls, and that's where it starts, and we got to keep it going from there.
And there was another one.
The second one is racial equity. So when
they're very related.
Yeah,
they
really
are related.
So when you look at, for example, if you look at things like test scores and homeownership, and Buffalo's not alone in this inequity, but I think the world has woken up to the fact that we need to make certain that we protect the dignity and rights of all people, and that everybody has an equal opportunity to succeed. And we have to make sure that we are investing appropriately to make sure that that happens. And there are a lot of challenges both in Buffalo and elsewhere about that as a community we need to come together and fix.
But I think a lot of this does revolve around the issue of education, though.
I agree.
So, I mean, that seems to come up a lot. But also, and you said preparing the workforce, there are a lot of programs, a lot of new programs around Western New York particularly, mm-hmm. trying to, like, STEM, that kind of thing.
Yes.
Prepare the workforce for the future and make people realize that it's not that there is a lot of computers and technical work and needs for people in those fields that have to be trained.
Absolutely. And let's go back to good old manufacturing, which I think is really where the best story in our region is to be told. We're talking about tens of thousands of jobs that pay very well. But that field has so many challenges in that people don't think they want to work in manufacturing because they're picturing, you know, it's like the old Bethlehem Steel, which is not at all what manufacturing is like today. And even just the career education piece of this is challenging in that. And, you know, I'll give you an example. We're part of our Employ Buffalo Niagara, which is our workforce collaboration that is not just our members, but it's led by employers, but it includes education and training providers and workforce people. Our partner in this is the United Way, to really try to get a 360-degree approach to making certain we have the workforce for our future. But even when you look at that, there are disconnects. So we had a couple of employers that paid over $20 an hour that did not require a college degree. And do you know that we had a hard time getting people who were interested to apply for those jobs, partially because they thought, well, I don't want to work in manufacturing. So we need to do a better job on every aspect, not just education, but also career education. And we also have challenges here in this region with access and transportation for a lot of people. They can't get to the job. So an interesting fun fact for your next cocktail party is we have twice the developed land in Western New York that we had in 1950 and the same population. So twice the roads, twice the sort of developed space, which, by the way, is more expensive to maintain, but also really makes it challenging for people who don't have an automobile to get to a job. So that's like one of the big macro issues that we are trying to bring people together to solve. And education and training, you know, for a lot of the working poor in particular, which is really where we're focused, you know, they can't stop working to go to ECC for 2 years. They can't do it. They have bills to pay. So we're working with some what we're calling first choice employers, for example, who are minimum wage. They hire a lot of minimum wage people, that if a person stays with them for a certain period of time, that employer will pay for their training while they're at work to help them break that cycle of poverty. So it's those kinds of issues we're really trying to, it's messy and it's difficult, but really bringing the community together to sort of peel that onion and try to figure out how we can really protect our future.
And in the mass quote unquote transportation area, we have been trying, but I think kind of lax in developing, you know, where first we tried the downtown choo-choo train, I always call it, you know, closing the traffic to downtown. And then, and I would say that was a failed experiment, to say the least.
Well, I think at the time it was, yeah. But I have to say now that investment, we're really seeing some benefits in terms of connecting UB. But I agree. I mean, it didn't hold the promise.
And now,
of the future,
just what you're saying, it's we don't have like the connections, the mass transportation for people to get to work from who live in, let's say, down in the city that need to get to work to the suburbs. There's really, yeah. like you said, if they don't have an automobile, it's very hard.
It takes hours and a lot of changing
and a lot of
exactly
and motivation and time and whatever. So I don't know how that can be solved.
So one of the groups that is part of our Employ Buffalo Niagara is called Access and Transportation. And one of the strategies, we're working with a group of employers in Lancaster to actually try to do sort of first and last mile employer-led transportation assistance using Lyft, the ride-sharing service, as a part of that to connect people to transit. And so, you can sit here and complain about the NFTA all you want, but, you know, their reality is their reality, and we have to be innovative. We have to get some innovative solutions that involve employers and just be really smart about those investments that we're making.
And, you know, when you mentioned the NFTA, it's kind of ironic because whenever if they stop a route or they discontinue a route, people are, Oh no, what am I going to do? But on the other hand, you just pointed out, and I think people understand, that they are discontinuing because of the lack of use, because economically or the minimum amount of people or whatever their statistics are, economically it's not viable for them.
Well, I think, you know, it's super interesting. This is a very complex issue. So this little demonstration project that we're working on, what we found is even employers that are really connected to a bus line, a major bus line, for example, you know, those buses don't run after the third shift lets out. I mean, those are the things you don't think about. So we actually have done an analysis. I say we. It's really Go Buffalo. It is part of our coalition who's done the yeoman's work on this to talk to employers. How many employees do you have that are getting off that shift, and where do they live? And could we do a demonstration project that would have a different approach? Because employers need workers, and workers want jobs. And so this is a problem as a community we should be able to solve.
I just, every time I talk to you, I always feel optimistic, and I feel like if everything is in good hands, that you and the members of, I'm sure there's others besides you, but
I give you all the
credit, Daddy, but maybe all the blame too, I don't know. But all I can say is that it's good to know that minds and people are working on all of these issues to make Buffalo and Western New York and a better place to live for everybody.
And I would say just to your listeners, if anyone is interested in working on any of these issues, the Employ Buffalo Niagara Coalition is a coalition of the willing. There's about 100 people from the community involved. And, it's an open invitation to anybody who'd like to participate.
And tell them you heard this on Target when
yes.
you were listening to Penny Wolfgang and Daddy Gallagher. So thanks for listening. Thank you so much. And I hope you enjoyed it and hope you learned something from our conversation. Join us again next week, same time, same station. Bye, everybody.
You've been listening to On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at Western New York and our community. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write to Penny Wolfgang at 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Amherst, New York, 14226.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.